And hello, people of the internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is A Walk Through the Mind, a moment where we can sit down, hang out, chit-chat, discuss a handful of ideas that have been bouncing around inside my head, and see if we can't take those ideas for ourselves and go out and get the conversation started with friends, family, the people we meet on the street, or maybe we just get those gears turning within our own heads and see where it takes us. So did you hear the news? Did you watch Good Morning America? I'm sure it even popped up anywhere else on the grand social media deal, anywhere you get your news. But lab-grown meat is going to be for sale in the great old United States of America.
Hey, good morning, George. Americans ate 75 billion pounds of red meat and chicken last year. But what if some of that meat was not raised on farms, but instead of high-tech facilities? Scientists say that could be good for the environment and your health, and soon it could be on menus and store shelves.
High-tech facilities. Now this offers some fantastic ideas, questions on how things are going, whether or not we really want to eat some lab-grown meat. As far as I can understand, the things like the Impossible Burgers, the fake meat made out of vegetables, kind of had a hit. They're still around, but they were more or less a flop. People want meat. They want steak. They want pork chops. They want their bacon. They want to be able to survive on meat. That's what Americans do. But it's lab-grown meat. How are we going to really kind of work with this? How are we to understand how all of this works out? You know, we've got two companies here in the United States have gotten started. There's also an Indonesian and an Israeli company that are fighting for positions to be able to get their lab-grown, their cultivated meats for sale. But where are we going with all this?
Two cultivated meat producers now getting the green light to begin commercially selling their chicken, not raised on a farm, but in a facility. The meat is grown using real animal cells in large bioreactors fed with nutrients.
Fed with nutrients in large bioreactors, but not on farms. This does offer some consideration in that we're not forcing a whole bunch of chickens or cows or pigs to tight living quarters. The farms of yesteryear are definitely gone, where the whole thing was more or less sustainable within itself. Yeah, they had a handful of chickens, a handful of cows, a couple of pigs. You had your vegetable garden over off in the yonder. Maybe it was a little bit bigger. You actually grew enough corn for the greater local community. But alas, times have changed. Now we look at big ag. The consolidation of products, buying in bulk as an easy comparison. The more of one thing that you can produce, the cheaper the unit price is. And therefore, the more you're able to market up, the higher the profit yield. And so instead of spending $100 between chickens, cows, and pigs, you just focus on the chickens. Grow a whole bunch of chickens. Someone else is going to grow cows. They can focus all that $100 on cows. And the money works out nice and easy in the grand scheme of things. But when we start kind of putting everything all crammed in next to each other, shoulder to shoulder, we got diseases to worry about because no one gets a nice clean spot. No one gets their 15 minutes of daylight through the pen, the exercise yard. And so it's all about production, production, production. Eggs and chicken meat, where we think about the cows and the grading as they're getting milked. And so maybe there is something to looking forward to having all of this done in just a small little footprint.
You're making chicken in there.
Yeah, so if you look at this is approximately a 200 plus liter tank. And we take cells from a chicken or an egg. It takes 2 weeks to grow the equivalent of one chicken, 1,000 chickens, or 100,000 chickens.
So you're saying in this factory, you can make more meat faster and cleaner than an average farmer?
Well, ultimately, yes.
More meat, if we're going to call it meat, it's cultivated meat. It is meat cells, kind of created. They took the start of living cells. Who knows where they got those cells? Some websites say that you can get it from the living tissue and just kind of recreate it. Others sites say that you need stem cells. And even other places even say that you need to take the embryo, a fertilized embryo, fertilized egg, and then you can expand it from there. I guess a fertilized egg is the baseline, at least for stem cells, and you can expand upon that. And so it seems to, again, kind of make sense if we're not having to worry about jamming all these chickens and pigs and whatnot full of antibiotics, having to worry about the super anti-resistant or the super resistant antibiotics that seem to be coming out, the super bugs that are going to take out the entire world because they've outmaneuvered all of the medicines that we're able to throw at them.
The company says cell-cultivated meat could help feed the world's booming population using a fraction of the land and water of animal farming and help reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Many experts say more study is needed.
More study is needed, however. There's always going to be more study needed, especially in just a small footprint of a situation. Doing my little bit of research before this episode, remembering about the back-in-the-day times of the talk of lab-grown meat, and people had created the first hamburger through a cultivation process similar to this. And because it was the first one, it racked up on about a $300,000 bill for one hamburger. And they were able to get down to about $12 per hamburger. What's a hamburger? About a quarter pound. So almost $40 a pound for the hamburger. But again, if you're not outwardly killing a living animal, an animal that has experienced life, you just kind of take the pre-existence of it, just a clump of cells. You recreate that, you grow it, you expand upon it. Definitely seems like a better humane, I guess a humane situation is the overall idea of that. But I do have to question the use of at least energy. I can't argue the reduction in farmland. The amount of land you need to have a cow be able to roam, get its exercise, a chicken to be able to go around, peck out at all the bugs and whatnot that they eat, all of the water and wastewater, waste of such animals that you have to consolidate. Again, looking at the big ag situation of things. But when I think of lab equipment, think about all the sterilization, you look at the giant stainless steel vats that are used, those definitely didn't come around too cheap. Those are well-machined, very specifically concocted elemental combinations to make sure that the stainless steel is how it's supposed to be, the energy used to create the vats. And then being able to boil these things or put them at whatever temperature, because it's not room temperature, I can promise you that. The amount of clean water that needs to go in, what kind of energy are we looking at for that? How clean does the water need to be for a cow or a chicken? Does it need to be filtered and extremely pure? What kind of vitamins and minerals and amino acids are we chipping in, giving into these things? And where do all of those come from? It's not like you just go down to the local orchard and you pick out your amino acids that you want. No, those are cultivated, scraped off from somewhere else. And maybe it's a cheap enough and simple enough situation. Again, price per pound, volumetric pricing, we're already making enough amino acids for everything else. So why not look at just how cheap everything else is and we'll just wash away on the energy usage, the lights, the computer energy, the whatever machining and tooling is needed to separate everything out. So I won't say completely greener, but we can say it definitely has some upsides to the waste of everything, the waste of the animals, not the wasted animals. Because we do put a lot of the carcasses, the products, the byproducts of the animals to a lot of good use, creating all sorts of little things. Instead of making plastics, we got natural things that we can work with. Bone meal, ground up bone is actually really good for plants. I don't see us getting bone meal from cultivated chicken meat. That's neither here nor there. And it's definitely, like I said, that $40 a pound for the ground hamburger, but that was a couple years ago. Who knows where we're going with the chicken meat, but the CEO of Upside Foods, the grand poobah of this approved cultivated meat for a handful of private restaurants to sell it, hawk it out to the people, He sees the price point becoming a feasible point in the future.
It's a premium product. It signifies upside to animal welfare, environment, and enormous opportunity for health. So we think the initial pricing will be premium to organic. And with time, over the next 5 to 10 years, it'll come to conventional parity. And we also expect the price of conventional meat to continue to grow up significantly. It keeps going up. Cultivated meat price comes down, and there's a sweet spot in the next 5 to 10 years where we intersect and we become more affordable than conventional meat.
So looking at it right now as a premium to organic, a lot of organic things are just a name, and because they've got the name organic, they get to jack the price up 10, 15, 30, 33%, somewhere along those lines. And so we'll get to look at this cultivated meat, this lab-grown meat, and it will cost a little bit more just due to R&D, getting it out there, recouping some of the cost, waiting for future investors. But as long as the investors keep coming along, as long as they are able to sell it to enough people, show that there's a return on investment, more money will be made, more vats will be created, more chicken will be cultivated. And again, it'll become at least on par with our current regular chicken. And I can't disagree with Uma Valetti when he says that the cost of regular meat will go up. As we've seen with the cost of gas, petrol, natural gas, and or the crude, prices are going to go up. Crude oil is it crude or is it natural gas? Now I seem to have forgotten. But one of those two products helps gives us man-made fertilizer. Helps us create the things that help make plants grow. Plants don't really like electrolytes. They like things like nitrogen and phosphorus. And so with the cost of gardening, in a nutshell, going up, becomes a little bit more expensive because, again, we're not looking at small mom-and-pop farms. We're looking at giant, giant farms, and they don't buy just a bag or two of fertilizer. They buy dump truck fulls. You've got to be able to feed all of their livestock. And then we can look at the shenanigans of rules and regulations, being able to get your name in there. Maybe you are a small-time farmer and you want to be able to go over to a USDA-approved slaughterhouse, but you can't because Joe down the road, who's got the giant farm, he's got it all booked up for all summer. By the end of summer, your critters are too big, too evolved to make decent cuts of meat out of. It's kind of crazy when you look at the processing time for a chicken, that chickens aren't even supposed to be more than 6 months old by the time you slaughter them for some of the best meat. Once they're a little bit older, they get too gamey. The muscles have worked a little bit too much. It's kind of something that makes me wonder about this cultivated meat, how it's going to feel, how it's going to taste. A lot of people like veal because it's a young cow that's been chained down, doesn't get to move around, and so we can talk about the animal cruelty situation on that. But there's a tenderness to it. And you don't want bucks when you're hunting venison, as far as I understand. You don't want the 10 to 15-year-old bucks because they're tough and strong. They've built up too much muscle. And so when we're growing this cultivated meat, where is that texture line? Is there a grain to the meat that shows where it's been stretched and worked to build up the muscle, to build up the strength? Because you don't build muscle if you're just sitting around. You don't get that weight to it. Veal is that specialty cut that gets a premium because it's a certain kind of care, you want to call it care, in how that it's processed. But chickens, little tiny dinosaur raptors that they are running around, they build up their muscles, they build up their leg strength, get some delicious chicken wings out of them when they're flapping their wings. So you need that growth. What do you say on these closing arguments, people from Good Morning America?
I got to try this cell-cultivated chicken at the facility in California, guys. I got to say the texture was a little bit different, but it did taste like chicken. The company says they hope to get it on restaurant menus in the next few weeks, then maybe on store shelves in the next 5 years, and dozens of startup companies are getting in on the game, guys.
You mentioned the texture, so is it more like tofu?
You know, George, it was pretty close to chicken, but maybe a little bit rubberier. You have to give it a try for yourself. A restaurant in California is going to roll it out next month.
Would you guys try it?
I think I would. I would. I do like the reduction in animal cruelty, but we'll see.
The rubbery didn't sell me.
I've been thinking about becoming a vegetarian. Mm.
Well, that was a sales failure. Rubbery is not my go-to texture. So, but at the same time, again, it does taste like chicken. It does have the basic amino acids of chicken. I will always ask, what else are you putting in with the amino acids? I get kind of weird when I think about farmed fish. Used to go fishing for trout out in Washington, and they would stock the lake. I'd be appreciative of the stocked lake, but you could tell the difference between the fish that were there that were stocked that year and when you caught a fish that had been in the lake for at least a year. The meat, the structure of the fish in the freshly deposited fish would be a white meat, but the ones that had been in there for a year would be a deep, dark red, almost like a salmon color. And there was an absolute taste and texture difference. Now, I'm sure the fish that were getting fed at the stockyard were getting fed all the appropriate vitamins and minerals. They just weren't getting the collagen from bugs, which is where the red comes from, and the fish that have survived more than a year. But I would always wonder, are they putting fluoride in the fish food? So that way when I eat the fish, kind of like the mercury in fish that you got to worry about out in Lake Washington. But maybe that's a little too far. But at the same time, it's not far enough in my mind when you're thinking about how to best build these amino acids. And who decides what the best amino acids are? How do we know that? I mean, not all meat is the same. You look at just free-range chicken and regular store-bought chicken, there's a definite taste difference. At least I can taste the difference. You can taste the difference between your regular Kroger steaks and something that is purely grass-fed, grass-finished. Definite taste and texture difference. I've been buying my ribeyes from the local farmer's market. Not that I'm buying ribeyes all the time, but if I'm buying a steak, I'm buying a ribeye. And when I would buy them from Kroger out in Washington, before I was going to farmer's markets, eat a whole ribeye and be just satisfied. These ribeyes that I'm buying from my farmer's market, I can only eat half of one. They're so filling. It's weird. Still delicious. But an upside that I see for this cultivated meat, even though it may be a little on the rubbery side, not too much like tofu, is when we start going out and exploring the stars, when we got all those spaceships all flying out, all Star Wars and Star Trek style, maybe a little bit more like Firefly. Everybody's going to want their bacon. They're going to want their chicken wings or chicken breasts. Maybe a fat ribeye out on the space veranda, soaking in the starlight. Kind of hard to grow a cow, raise a cow on a spaceship. Kind of hard to raise chickens in the red desert of Mars. Who knows about even raising fish out there? Seems a little dry. And so if all we have to do is pack a handful of cells that we just have to maintain, keep those cells alive, and we can recreate and grow and grow and grow, and within a handful of weeks, you got 1,000 pounds worth of chicken you get to eat. Seems like a logical, fair enough explanation for me. Not too inclined to go out and eat it here locally. I think I'm still going to do my best to shop at the farmer's market for my meats and veggies. But it wouldn't be a surprise for me to see it out in the stores or even making its way all the way through to the fast food restaurants. Burger King had the Impossible Burger, that veggie burger, for a little while. Didn't seem to go so well. But they also had the black burger with the black bun. Kind of a weird phenomenon. We're willing to eat stuff. People eat at Taco Bell, and that is not 100% beef. But sometimes there's a drunk calling for Taco Bell, and you just kind of have to go there. Will not talk down on people that need that fix. I get it. Been there. But I will say that if you're looking for that meat alternative, if you're looking for something a little bit more healthy, you're not looking for the animal slaughter, and you just want to take chicken or crab or lobster in this context that I'm about to go into off the dinner plate for a night or two of the week, I might point you in the direction of lion's mane mushrooms. You can even look into oyster mushrooms. Again, look for your farmers markets in the local area. They're popping up everywhere. These mushrooms are not your typical portobellas or criminis or white button mushrooms that you see at the grocery stores. They have a little bit different of a texture, a little bit different of a flavor. They're not completely all the squishy mushroominess that the oysters kind of are in a general rude comparison. I enjoy mushrooms. But the lion's mane kind of has a texture to that of crab or lobster, where it's got some resistance, it's got some bite, it's kind of still soft. It has a sweetness to it, but like a mushroom, it will absorb all of the taste or all of the flavors that you have going cooking with it. I've heard of lion's mane crab cakes. I've used lion's mane in place of lobster in a macaroni and cheese dish. That disappeared off of the dining room table. Even the vegetarian was hesitant. She thought there was meat in that macaroni and cheese and was reassured that it was lion's mane mushroom. She even went back for seconds. You can use lion's mane in the form of chicken as well. I've cooked up lion's mane, just a simple pan fry and a little tiny bit of oil. Cooked it up, browned it up, and then thrown it in Frank's Red Hot. You almost can't tell that it's not chicken. Tastes just about like chicken wings. I've had it made with a General Tso's kind of recipe. I've even included in today's episode links an orange chicken recipe. And not only that, this natural thing, if you're not going to look at the lion or the farmer's markets, you definitely can go foraging because they are natural. But there's studies that say lion's mane mushrooms can help protect against dementia. Regular consumption might even help relieve mild symptoms of depression and anxiety. Rebuilding the nervous system, the neurons up in the brain. There's statements that it might help in protecting against ulcers in your overall digestive tract. Reducing heart disease, managing your diabetes. There's a potential to help fight cancer. Reducing of inflammation and oxidative stress. And boosting the immune system. And not cultivated. Not grown in a lab. Sometimes at least grown indoors. But a natural, healthy alternative to meat. In addition to your meat. Dare I go so far as to say find yourself some oyster mushrooms and cook those up with your bacon and eggs in the morning. And you might have yourself a fantastic day. But all in all, meat's on the menu, one way or the other, be it real meat, or cultivated meat, or a meat substitute such as mushrooms, lion's mane. We'll figure it out. We're going to choose our way to eat things, how to consume things, even if we have to do things a weird way and get that rubbery texture so we can venture out in the stars. But I've been Billy Bones, B-I-L-L-Y-B-O-N, the number 3-S. You find me on Twitter, at Billy Bones. You find me on Mastodon, the Fediverse, at Billy Bones, at NoAgendaSocial.com. Go there, boost the toot, retweet the tweet when I send out the show link. Maybe that gets someone else to at least click on it. Maybe you want to say hello, maybe you want to say whether or not I got something right, got something wrong, whether or not I went too far or didn't go far enough, it's all welcome. Let's start that conversation. Let's get it going. But I've got a website as well, billybones.com. There you can go. You find show notes. I got quite the collection in there today. But there's also links to past episodes, a link to the SoundCloud for the music that I use on the show, a link that says Tabletop Woodworks, if you need a little bit more value for your value. And, speaking of which, there is that button that says Value for Value on there. If you found value out of this podcast, be it the single episode or the entire catalog, fantastic, I'm glad you did. The first thing that I ask that you do is you give this show a share. Maybe someone else will get the gears turning, maybe they'll find a talking point, or maybe they'll just find it not too worthwhile, but that's okay, they gave it a shot. Thank you very much for that. But if you feel that this show is worth a monetary amount of money, monetary donation, you go to billybones.com, scroll all the way down, click the Value for Value button. It'll take you to PayPal, you chip in, you donate, you support the show in a number that you feel is appropriate. If you think I've earned a beer, thank you. If you think I've earned a cup of coffee, awesome. If you think I've earned a Lamborghini, send it all. And you'll become an executive producer today, like Sir Sean of the Allegheny Valley, sending in his $15 monthly donation. Thank you very much, sir, for helping me keep the lights on, keeping the mics buzzing, and the music going still. Hit the stop button and start again. and keeping the music going and keeping the conversation alive. But if you don't want to donate dollars, the Federal Reserve Freedom Units, well, you can do like Sir Sean of the Allegheny Valley did as well. And he streamed in the last episode 832 Satoshis, just a handful of pennies, little teeny tiny bits of Bitcoin. If you're using a new podcast app or you just have the Bitcoin address, fantastic. Go in, chip in, support the show, and then again, a number that you feel is appropriate. But I would like to thank you very much for listening. I love you guys, and I'll talk to you next week.